I'd like to welcome you here to the Science Industry and Business Library of the New York Public Library. We are very pleased to have with us tonight Valerie Corbett, and she's going to do a program on how co-ops and condos must comply with the new New York City green building regulations. Now, before the program starts, I just want to do a little housekeeping. I want everyone to know that we are filming this program, and if you wish to or don't wish to be in the shot, you can sort of move around, but the camera is going to be focused right on Valerie, so you don't really need to worry about that. If you ask questions, you will need to use a handheld microphone, this same microphone which I'm going to pass on, and someone will pass the microphone to you. And I believe we've agreed that you'll hold, would be best if people hold their questions until she finishes the presentation. There will be adequate time to ask questions and get the answers that you are hoping for. Okay, let me just follow with a little information about Valerie. Valerie Corbett is a LEED accredited professional and BPI certified building professional with over 30 years experience in real estate development and financial services in both public and private sectors. She has a proven track record in strategic planning, managing large-scale real estate projects, leading cross-functional development teams, contract negotiations, and capital raising. As a LEED AP and BPI certified professional, she brings special expertise and professional relationships in green building, energy efficiency, sustainable development, and related green products. IntelliGreen Partners, the company she founded in 2009, is an energy efficiency consulting firm that assists co-op boards and condo boards through the energy audit and retro commissioning process, as well as how to finance improvements in compliance with the new green building laws. And she is here tonight largely to acquaint you with some of the terms and vocabulary that you really need to know and understand to deal with this new environment of green buildings and regulations, which is going to make New York City a cleaner place. And with that, I give you Valerie.
Thank you, and thank you all for coming to this introductory session on New York's new green building laws. And what I want to do tonight is help you understand how large co-ops, condos, and rental buildings have to comply with the new laws. When I say large, I mean 50 units or more, approximately. So how many of you in the room, just so I get a feel for you, how many of you live in co-ops or condos or multifamily rentals? Okay, good. I see Mary's here, and she's the president of a board of Georgetown Muse. That's a very big co-op complex in Queens, and she's done a lot of energy efficiency improvements. And I see Josh from Jordan from Power Concepts, and Matt from Association for Energy Affordability. So we have some energy auditors in the room as well. So what I'm going to talk to you about tonight is relevant for all three types of multifamily buildings. As Maddie said, I'm going to use some technical terms. So if you did not understand something I'm saying, I'd rather you not go through the whole presentation and not understand. So raise your hand if there's something I'm saying that, you know, a technical term or something that you don't understand. But by the end of the evening, you should understand most of it. I think it's easier to start talking about the laws if we understand the policy behind it. So let's talk about that to start. Oh, of course, I just turned the screen off. That way. Okay. So what I'm going to cover tonight are basically the background of the Green Building Laws. That's where I'll touch on the policy. We'll go into some detail about what each of the laws are. There's going to be four I'm going to talk about tonight, but two I'm going to really focus on that affect you as multifamily residential building owners or renters. And I'm going to talk about the benefits of early compliance. And then at the end, we'll touch on all the financing options that you have available to you. So first, we'll start with the background on the green building laws and why did they come about. We live in New York City. We think of ourselves as a green city because we have this incredible public transportation system. But if you look at the carbon emissions of New York City compared to the national average, we're actually twice as high as other cities. And that's primarily because of our buildings. We live in very tall buildings. And when I say carbon emissions, or CO2 emissions, or greenhouse gas emissions, I'm kind of meaning the same thing. So the city did a study, and they discovered that 80% of our carbon emissions in New York City actually come from our buildings. We might think it comes from cars, but it really doesn't. 39% comes from residential buildings. And New York has a goal of reducing our greenhouse gas emissions by 30% by 2030. And you may have heard a lot of talk and discussions about new green building, LEED buildings, new buildings. Battery Park City has a lot of them. But we're never going to make a dent in carbon emissions with new buildings. We really have to tackle the existing buildings. This is the breakdown of our energy usage in New York City in 2007. And as you can see, only 23% of it is used for transportation. That's because we're very efficient when it comes to transportation. But the rest of it, 77, is from buildings, and most of that is from our large buildings. The green and brownish pies are for large buildings, which includes lighting and hot water, lighting and heating, and appliances and cooling. Now, the reason we're going to tackle the existing buildings is because by 2030, New York City projects that 85% of our energy use is going to come from buildings that exist today. So if you look around you, all these buildings that are here today, they're going to be here in 2030. So if we want to reduce our carbon emissions, we really have to tackle existing buildings, not just focus on new. And the way the city decided to approach this, they went through a lot of hearings and a lot of public debate and had big task forces that involved public officials, developers, bankers, co-op board members, and engineers, architects, I mean, you name it, they were involved for 2 years. And they decided that probably the best way to approach this was to tackle the large buildings first, because New York has a lot of large buildings. So they decided that buildings greater than 50,000 square feet would be the ones they focus on. And a proxy for that is 50 units or more for residential. Not exact, but it's a good enough proxy. So if you live in a 6-unit building, it's not going to affect you. If you live in a 25-unit building, it's probably not going to affect you. If you live in a 70-unit building, it's probably going to affect you. There's about 22,000 buildings over 50,000 square feet in all 5 boroughs, and a lot of them are in Manhattan. And 2/3 of these are residential. So how will the laws affect you? The building owners, for one thing, will have to benchmark the energy consumption of their buildings for the first time, and I will explain what benchmarking it means in a few minutes. They will also have to do an energy audit and a retrocommissioning once every 10 years. But the energy audits are going to provide you with very valuable information, especially if you're in a co-op or a condo. You actually own your unit. You are a building owner, whether you realize it or not. You own that building. So it's in your best interest to reduce the energy costs of that building and to save money where you can. At the same time, you'll be reducing our carbon emissions. So owners will be able to reduce their operating costs. What are the green building laws? There's 4 that I'm going to talk about tonight. The first two I'm going to go over very briefly. New York City Energy Conservation Code is the first one, and that affects all buildings. The lighting upgrades and submetering primarily affects commercial buildings and the tenants in commercial buildings, but it touches on multifamily buildings, and I'll explain that. Benchmarking is going to affect you if you're in a building over 50,000 square feet, and also energy audits and retrocommissioning requirement will affect you if you live in a large building. You see the LL8509, those numbers, those letters and numbers under each one. That stands for local law. So LL8509 means it's now called Local Law 85, which was passed in 2009. So if you want to look at these laws, you can Google them, like LL8509 or Google Local Law 8509, or you can go to my website. They're all there. You can go to the city's website and find them in the Department of Buildings, or you can go to City Council and find them there. So they're very readily available. So we'll start with the code, LL8509. This amends the New York City Energy Conservation Code. And New York City adopted the New York State Energy Code of 2007 and now calls that their own code. So we have our own city code. But it is now more stringent than the New York State Code. And there are a lot of proposals in the works to make it even more sort of green building oriented. But the most important thing that happened when they enacted this law in 2009 was they got rid of what we call the 50% loophole, which enabled owners of buildings to not comply with the code if they did a renovation of less than 50% of the building systems. So that's not allowed anymore. So now anything you do to the building is required to be code compliant. Lighting upgrades and submetering is Local Law 8809. And this involves electric meters or submeters that must be installed in commercial tenant spaces or floors over 10,000 square feet. The government is giving commercial building owners until 2025 to comply. This will allow them to renew their leases and renegotiate leases a couple of times and build in language that, takes into account the submetering and how the tenants will pay. And the tenants will be given statements of their monthly electrical usage. And by the way, just so you understand, everything I'm talking about tonight for private sector buildings, which is what we live in, are also required of city-owned buildings. And the requirements for the city-owned buildings happen faster than for us, and also for smaller size buildings. So the city is already doing this and has been doing this for these kinds of upgrades for years. Lighting upgrades applies to the base building and the non-residential spaces within multifamily buildings. So in the case of, let's say, a large co-op on the Upper East Side with the Gristides on the ground floor, it's going to affect Gristides because that is a retail space. If you are in the Upper West Side and you have a doctor's office on your lobby, it's going to affect that office. It's not going to affect the dwelling units or the spaces serving them, the common areas, the hallways, laundry rooms, boiler rooms, etc. And the lighting upgrades, to bring the upgrades up to the energy code standards, are going to affect this list of things here: interior lighting, lighting controls, exterior lighting, tandem wiring, exit signs. I put a picture here of an LED exit sign. This is a very popular item to become more energy efficient. If you have an exit sign on with incandescent bulbs in it, they usually have two, and they're on 24/7, usually they're on all the time, you switch it to an LED, you're going to save 20% right there on the operating costs of that one item. And I said the deadline was 2025, and when you do these upgrades, this all has to be certified by a PE is a professional engineer, an RA is a registered architect, or a licensed electrician. Yes?
Did you say it does not apply to common areas like hallways and...
That's correct. It excludes... That's correct. But so you just need to be concerned if you have commercial tenants, it's going to affect them. Let me just go back before I show you that really cool picture. The reason I'm even talking about this with you is not so much that you're required, you're obviously not required to do it, but it's a good thing to do. In some cases, it's a good thing to do. Mary Fisher did it in her co-op it's in Queens, right? The Georgetown News. 930
Garden Hills.
Kew Garden Hills, 930 units. And it's a complicated thing to do. It's difficult to do. But if your building is master metered, you have 1 meter for the whole building, the only way you can charge people for what they use is through shares or square footage or something like that. It's really not fair because you've got people that use a lot of energy and they don't pay their fair share. Once you submeter, they start to pay their fair share. So it's a good thing to think about, but you don't have to do it. A lighting upgrade can be done voluntarily, and this one was done on an Upper East Side pre-war co-op. You can see on the left-hand side, the hallway is lit with incandescent ceiling fixtures. It's kind of dark and dingy. And they're on 24/7. Those lights are on 24/7. They replace that with soffits in the ceilings and CFL light bulbs in the ceiling. And then they also have sensors in the hallway. So there are occupancy sensors. So when you open up, so the lights are not on all the time. The lights are bi-level lights. So they're on much lower, but to code, when there's no one in the hallway, which is most of the time. And when someone comes up the elevator and the elevator door is open, or you open your front door, the lights go on. So it's always brightly lit if you're in the hallway, but it goes down if you're not in the hallway, and that saves you a lot of money as well. Now let's talk about benchmarking, which is Local Law 8409. And this applies to, again, buildings over 50,000 square feet. Benchmarking, if you're not familiar with the term, is a way to collect data of the energy performance of your building. So you collect the Con Ed bills, oil bills if you have oil, water usage bills, and so on. And you input that collected data into a software program. For these green building laws, it's going to be a program that the city has developed with the EPA, the federal government's Environmental Protection Agency, and they will collaborate with a state agency called NYSERDA, which means the New York State Energy Research and Development Authority, because NYSERDA has its own benchmarking tool, and they'll come up with a unique tool for New York City that will have enough buildings in the database to compare your building to. And the screenshot here is of the existing EPA portfolio manager for multifamily residential buildings. So if you're curious about how benchmarking is going to work, you can go on the government website, you can collect your data, and you can input it into the program. You won't get a score, but you can see as a starting point, a baseline, how much energy your building is using. The deadline for us, for people who live in co-ops, condos, rental, multifamily rental buildings, is May 2011. In May 2011, you will have to input your data into the model. That means you have to collect all your 2010 energy data now. So you're going to input all of 2010 data. So we're already in the ninth month, so you should have collected 9 months of your bills already. And if you're not aware of this, you should ask your property manager or alert your board that this is something you're going to have to do. So the good boards, the good property managers, just as a matter of good practice, they will scan your bills every month and keep them, on their systems. And so if you ask for the bills for a year, they'll give them to you, they'll email them to you. So that's not a problem. But if you have to make sure your property manager is doing that. Now the score will be, the benchmark will generate a score, but it won't be made public until 2013. So you'll get a score in 2011, but it won't be made public until 2013. The score is from 1 to 100. So it's like, grade school. How did I do on the test? If I score, 85, 90, I feel pretty good. If I score 7, I don't feel so good, So some buildings actually have really low scores. Yes?
Is the data, does the data need to be aggregated, or does it have to be specific to, let's say, common space, tenants, et cetera?
That's a good question. So I think it's good to, address that. Oh, thank you. Okay, I'm not sure I can get it exactly right, but you asked...
I'm sure you'll do better than I
do. Okay. I think where you're headed is you wanted to know, is the data that you have to input just for the common areas, or is it for all the residential units as well? Is it for the whole building? And the answer is it's for the whole building. And in the past, this was very difficult to do, and I'll go into that later because I'll just spend too much time. It's fun for me, but I don't want to waste your time. So the way we're going to do it in the future, and I've already started this, is Con Edison, if you have Con Edison, will give you the aggregate data for your building. So rather than go around and ask all your shareholders for their Con Ed account numbers, and then you can go online and get their account information, Con Ed is providing a service. There's a small fee associated with it, and they will provide you the aggregate data. They will not tell you whose unit it is. They'll divide it by service class number. So you'll get service class 1 is like professional office. Service class 2 is residential. So those are the unit owners. It'll be one number per month for electric and then another number for gas. And then service class 9 is the common area. So you'll know everything, and that's what you input into these programs. So it's a lot simpler now than it was. Now, 2013, it's going to go public, so hold that thought because that's important. If it goes public, I mean, it's going to go public in 2013. But when it goes public, if you have a low score, you might want to do something about that, because if you've got shareholders that want to sell their units, or you're a landlord of a rental building and you want to reduce vacancy time and, you know, increase rents and, you know, have really popular building that you're renting, you want to have a high score, because an energy efficiency score is going to be another indicator of a building's financial health and a sign of good management. Once people are really aware of these green building laws, and you're like the pioneers, you're the first to... from the general public to really, you know, show an interest in this. This has been going on for a couple of years now among architects and engineers and government, but, you know, the public is just kind of getting more interested in this. But I can tell you that prospective tenants, prospective buyers of co-ops and condos, banks, appraisers, they're all going to look at your score. And if it's not public, in 2011 or 2012, they may ask you what your score is. 2013, they won't have to ask you, it will be public. And commercial buildings are way ahead of multifamily residential. Commercial buildings have, for a long time, been trying to reach what we call Energy Star standards, which is a standard that the EPA has with that model I told you about, the portfolio manager model. And they've discovered that what the market values becomes market value. In other words, if you have a high score, the market values that building. And what they've discovered is that the spaces are vacant for a much shorter time than a comparable building with no score or a lower score. And likewise, if they're trying to sell a building, the energy savings goes right to the bottom line, and the building is priced at a higher value and actually sells for a higher value. So commercial landlords are like, they don't have to be told this. They're just doing this. Multifamily building owners are need a little bit more prodding, but I think you're going to understand this as we go along. Energy audit and retro commissioning. This to me is like the most important, other than the benchmarking. So I want to spend a lot of time on this one. Local law 87. Now I don't know if all of you know what an energy audit actually is, so I thought I would just take a minute to. Read the definition from the law. It's a systematic process of identifying and developing modifications and improvements of base building systems, which I'll tell you what that is, including but not limited to alterations of such systems and the installation of new equipment, insulation, and other generally recognized energy efficiency technologies to optimize energy performance of the building and achieve energy savings. So that's the whole point. So it's a data collection process on the building systems. Building systems means anything to run the building, anything that protects you, walls, windows, doors, that's referred to as the envelope. You've got six sides, the roof, the bottom, and then the four walls. You've got six sides to think about. Heating, ventilation, the roofing system, your domestic hot water system, all your lighting and electrical systems, elevators, escalators, and all the motors and pumps that go along with them. So those are the systems. This picture on the right is a picture of a technician on the roof of a building that has mechanical ventilation. And what he's doing in this bigger picture, he's as a result of an energy audit, they discovered that the ventilation system in a centrally air-conditioned building was leaking, which means that it's leaking your air-conditioned cool air in the summer. That's going out into through the walls and out to the atmosphere. And in the winter, it's losing the heat through the same vent system out to the walls. So it's wasteful, it's expensive. This process enables them to seal the vents where they find the leaks. Another test they might do is measuring the hot water in the building. If it's over 120 degrees, that's too hot. I heard about a building today where it was 180 degrees, which means you can scald yourself in like 1 second. So you want to make sure that it's set much lower in the down in the basement to not hurt people, and you don't want to have it so high that you're wasting money and energy. Again, this law affects all buildings over 50,000 square feet, and an audit will include an evaluation of the potential energy upgrades, including the initial cost and the annual savings. And I'll show you an example of a summary of that in a minute. The benchmarking is going to help you establish a baseline to help you measure future performance. So it's a good idea to do the benchmarking yourself now, and now you know that's where you start. And now anything you do after that is an improvement, and you can start monitoring your Con Ed bills, your oil bills, your water bills, and so on. Water bills are important because those rates go up double digits every year. That's a very costly resource. Let's see. So at the end of this, the energy auditor, which has to be a certified professional, you can't hire just any engineering firm to do this. The law is very specific about what kinds of certifications are required. And that team of people will put together what's called an energy audit report. And it can take them many, many, many weeks to do this. There's a lot of modeling involved, a lot of site visits. It's very detailed work, very labor-intensive work. They go around and count literally every light bulb in the building. That's just one thing that they do. Here's a sample of a report summary that you might receive after an energy audit. And it will give you, for each line item suggested, they'll give you the installed costs, the annual savings, and then the cost divided by the savings is going to give you the what we call the payback, or how many years to get back your investment. We'll talk about the NYSERDA program later. They're going to use slightly different way of measuring the the payback, but we don't need to go into that right now. But as you can see from the list, there are some high-cost items and some low-cost items. But even some of the high-cost items, like at the bottom, cogeneration, maybe a $300,000 item, but it's giving you almost $40,000 a year in savings, and that's less than an 8-year payback. That's not so bad for a really big piece of equipment that's going to last you 25 or 30 years. We'll talk about the financing of big things like this in the end. It doesn't necessarily mean you have to have a big capital outlay. There are ways to finance it that can avoid that. Low-flow water devices are a really fast and inexpensive way to start saving a lot of money. And the payback for this example is 6 months. Premium efficiency motors means high efficiency motors. That's the new term is premium, and it means, I think, over 90% efficiency or something like that. Common area lighting. If you're still using incandescent lighting in your building, you shouldn't. You should be exploring really attractive CFL lighting or some kind of fluorescent lighting or LEDs in some cases. So retro commissioning. After you do the audit, you're not finished. The law requires you to do the audit and the retro commissioning. You can't just do one. And again, the policy behind this is that there has been a lot of government incentive programs to encourage people to do audits, and so they do audits, and they get paid. They get the money, and they do the audit. And then what happens is they don't do anything with it. They don't implement the changes. So it's a real waste of resources. So for years and years, our state government had a carrot. They held out a carrot. It was a lot of money. We're going to pay for your audit, and we'll pay for you to do these things. And a lot of people just didn't know or, you know, didn't get into it or didn't realize it. And now the government is saying, look, we can't do this anymore. Now you're going to have a carrot and a stick. So the law is the stick. You're going to have to do this. The carrot is still there, but it's a smaller carrot. The money is still there, but there's less of it. And we'll talk about that later. So retrocommissioning you have to do. And again, you have to hire a specifically certified team, individual and team, under the law. And retrocommissioning, you can think of it like tuning up your car as opposed to putting a new engine in your car. It's really like a tune-up, cleaning, things like, you know, recalibrating. The definition in the law is a systematic process for optimizing the energy efficiency of existing base building systems through the identification and correction of deficiencies in such systems. And then it goes on about cleaning and, you know, sensors, controls, program settings. Basically, they're going to look at all the systems that we mentioned earlier. HVAC is central air, so it's heating, ventilation, and air conditioning. DHW is domestic hot water. It's going to look at all your systems. It's going to look that they're going to look at how the systems are performing compared to how they were designed to perform. They're going to look at the manuals. They're going to look at everything, and they're going to see if how is your boiler performing compared to how it should be performing. How is the HVAC system working compared to how it's being used? You know, how is the building being used? And so, along with this part of the law is required training of the staff and proper documentation of all your building systems. So you will have to keep on site all the manuals, any kind of paperwork to do with your building systems. And as a result of this work, the retrocommissioning team will give you a retrocommissioning report. And again, it's very specific in the law what that is, and it's very specific in the law what is required for retrocommissioning. And I forgot to mention the specificity of the audit, but there's a standard that we use called the ASHRAE Level 2 standard. It's a very comprehensive energy audit. And it's a nationwide standard, and New York City is adopting it. That picture. This a gentleman here is installing what's called a thermostatic radiator valve on a radiator. It's a steam radiator. And I've just put this up as a kind of a cool example of solving a problem. If you're in a building where people are complaining about heat, I'm too hot, I'm so hot in the winter, and I can't turn it down, or even if I turn it down, I'm still hot, and I open the window. If you go around New York City and you see a lot of open windows, you know they're too hot in there. And there's a lot of reasons for that, but one of them might be that it's just not being distributed properly. The heat is not being distributed properly. And the picture on the left is taken with an infrared camera. It's totally red. That means it's completely hot. It's radiating heat from the whole thing. Once you put this valve on, this costs about $100, you put this valve on and you set it to not go above a certain temperature. The next picture is the radiator with the valve on. The blue shows you that it's that's air. It's not heating up. The red part is heating up. The blue is not. So the person in that apartment is now a lot more comfortable. And that's how you can go around a whole building and sort of balance the system so people are more comfortable. Another way to use infrared cameras is to test whether you're losing heat in other parts of your building. Steam pipes, uninsulated steam pipes, are a notorious way of losing heat. And again, you're just wasting money, you're wasting energy. So the valve on the right, the pictures are exactly the same, just one's infrared and one's not. The pipe valve on the right-hand side has a lot of heat loss. And you can insulate that whole pipe and get a special jacket to fit right over that that wheel. This is another example of something that might result from you're doing an energy audit or retrocommissioning. If you live in a, you know, mechanically ventilated building, like those typical huge white brick buildings from the 60s where, you know, everybody's got central air in their apartment, But you have some people complaining that they're, it's too drafty, or it's I'm smelling everybody's cooking. You know, it's like one extreme to the other. I don't get enough air, I get too much air. There's a building science reason for that, but I'm not going to go into it all. But you can see by the numbers on the left-hand side, this is just representing a shaft, a ventilation shaft in a building, the north shaft. The numbers, the 1 to 18 means floors, so there's 18 floors. The top floors have large numbers. That means there's a lot of air moving around. And those people are probably suffering from drafty apartments. Likewise on the bottom and for some reason a little bit in the middle. It's uneven. If you install these constant airflow regulators in everybody's vents, in everybody's apartment, wherever they are, you can regulate the flow and so everybody's even and everybody's a lot more comfortable. The 33 is representing a lower airflow and more even for everybody. Now, once you've done the retrocommissioning and you've done the energy audit, you have two reports. What do you do with them? You staple them together, and now that's called the Energy Efficiency Report, or EER, and that's what the city wants from you. And that's what you have to submit. Now, the next bullet point I made in bold because it's really, really important to remember this one. The audit and retrocommissioning, both, must be performed within 4 years of filing your energy efficiency report. That is so the work is not stale. Now, within 4 years, there's another way to say that. You can't start it before 4 years. If you start the work before you're due, before 4 years, before you're due, they won't accept it. So hold that thought, because some of you may be living on blocks where you might have to do it twice, and you don't want to do it twice. You might have to do the audit twice, so you don't want to do it twice. So we're going to get into how you avoid that. You have to submit this energy efficiency report every 10 years, and the Department of Buildings is promulgating or issuing the rules over the next year or so. I think I've mentioned this. You have to have a registered design professional do the audit. Now, let's talk about early compliance. I'm going to get into this in more detail, but this is a very important concept. And if you go away tonight with nothing else, go away with this discussion on early compliance, because this is important. The Mayor's Office and the Department of Buildings strongly encourage early compliance. And every time they go to make a presentation to the public, wherever, conferences, whatever, they always say, early compliance. We really support early compliance. And you're only allowed to do that once, from January 1st, 2013 to December 31st, 2013. You get one window opportunity to hand in your report. The only way you can do that is if you start now. So let's talk about early compliance for that particular law. The way the law is written, your due date for your report depends on your tax block number. How many of you know what your tax block number is? Yeah, right? Okay. So everybody lives on a block. Every block has a tax block number assigned by the city. You also live on a lot. They've assigned you a lot number. So your building has a tax block number and a lot number. And the way to find this out, there's several ways. And if you want to send me an email, I can help you do this as well. But there's several ways. You can go on the Department of Finance's website, and there's a way to find it there. I forget what all the clicks are, but there's a way to find it there. If you look for the information on your address. If you go to propertyshark.com, you can feed in your address and for New York City and your zip code, and you can get that data from propertyshark.com. There's another one called oasisnyc.net. You can get it there. They're all free. Now, buildings on blocks that end in number 3, the last digit is 3, they have to follow early compliance. They have to submit their documents in 2013. So if you live on a block that ends in 3, you should be getting started now. If you live on a block that ends in 4, you should at least be thinking about it now. If you live on a block that ends in 0, 1, or 2, you don't have to submit until 2020, 2021, or 2022. So you may think you were given a pass, but I think you weren't. I think that if you are on a block that ends in 0, 1, or 2, you should be taking advantage of early compliance right now. And the reason is, remember I told you about that 4-year rule, the reason is that if you're due in 2020, you can't start the work until, what's 4 years before 2020? 2016. You can't even start until then. How long does it take to do an audit and a retrocommissioning? 2 years. 1 to 2 years. When is your benchmark number going to go public? How long are you going to be standing out there if you have a low score? From 2013 until?
16.
Or 17 or 18. Okay? So you're going to be hanging out there, but if you have a low score, you know, you should be concerned about this. If you have a great score, then maybe you don't have to worry. But if you have a low score and you're one of those, 2021, 2022, or 2020, unless you want to start the work, you know, let's say you want to start the work in 2013, 2014, you're not going to be allowed to submit those documents. So if you're trying to improve your score by making some improvements, you're just going to have to do it all over again when you do have your due date, when the reports are required. So you might end up having to do the work twice. No one wants to do the work twice. So my advice is if your block's last digit is 0, 1, 2, or 3, you should be heading for early compliance. You should be starting now and getting your documents in 2013. Again, we're going to talk about the benefits of early compliance in a few minutes, but here we go. Okay, so remember I told you the mayor and you know, city council and Department of Buildings is trying to encourage you to do early compliance. The carrot they've got hanging out there for you is that you get to skip your due date for another 10 years. So if you were due in 2020 and you submit in 2013 early compliance, you get to skip 2020. You don't have to do it again until 2030. So you get to skip your due date. That's the benefit. The other benefit, of course, is what I've been talking about. You get to raise your benchmark score before it's publicly disclosed. And it's, frankly, a simpler process to follow what I call the letter of the law. It's very clear. It's very simple. It's very straightforward. If you follow what the law says and you hand in your documents, it's probably going to be a lot simpler than the rules that the Department of Buildings are going to come up with. They'll admit to that. Okay. And another point that the city raised is that they know that there are not enough qualified energy auditors in the local New York City market to do all these audits. They estimate that once this all gets going, there's going to be 1,700 buildings a year that have to get processed for the green building laws. I estimate a much higher number. If you do 22,000 buildings and divide by the number of years we're being given, that's like 2,000 or 2,500 buildings. So whatever, it's a lot of buildings. Once the qualified New York engineers are booked solid, and you know, if there's a lot of business, their prices might go up, you may have to rely on New Jersey auditors, Connecticut auditors, the tri-state area. So there's certainly qualified people in the tri-state area, but they don't necessarily know everything to know about New York and what you need, how to do it right. So that's another reason why the city is encouraging you to do it early. All right, let's talk about the financing options very, very briefly. I usually do a whole presentation on this, but I'm just going to do bullet points on this part of it. So the ways to finance energy efficiency improvements, and what are the improvements? The things that count are windows, doors, insulation. If you do a white roof, you can get a federal tax credit. Green roofs. You get a New York City property tax abatement. There's a variety of benefits for all the things I've listed up here, solar PV, solar thermal, et cetera, et cetera. Now, let's talk about some of the government programs that are available. Let's talk about NYSERDA. Again, that's a New York State Energy Research and Development Authority. They have what's called a multifamily performance program. It was a very attractive program. It gave out quite a bit of money. Mary benefited from that program when it was up and running. It came to a halt last June 09, I think, and it's just starting up now in September 2010. And it's completely changed. So it's still there, but the there's fewer dollars. And instead of being based on a whole building energy performance savings, it's more based on items that you buy. Con Ed has another program from 5 to 75 units. And there are some commercial banks, believe it or not, who understand what we're trying to do. They understand energy efficiency improvements and how to finance them. And I can think of three banks right off the top who are perfectly willing to do this. I can think of some other ones that don't even know what we're talking about. They just haven't a clue, and it's going to take them a while. Remember I mentioned the cogeneration equipment, over $300,000. You don't necessarily have to lay out $300,000. You can lease it from the vendor that manufactures it or from an intermediary that deals with them. And so that reduces your cash outflow considerably. And then there's ESCO power purchase agreements. I guess you'd call these the first few bullet points, money that you get after you've spent the money as opposed to money you get before you spend the money. So there are a wide variety of federal tax credits, state personal tax credits, New York City property tax abatements, and so on, that you can attach to all these kinds of improvements. And then there's utility company rebates. Con Ed has rebates in addition to the multifamily program. And NYSERDA has the multifamily program, but then they have other programs for submetering and solar, so they have separate programs. Another way a board has to think about how you're going to finance it is you might have to raise the common charges, but it's better to raise them and do all these efficiency improvements and then save money in the end and then not raise the rates again later. It's also better to do that than continually assessing your tenants for energy surcharges. When oil prices go up, a lot of people were surcharging their tenants. And the last thing I just thought I'd mention, I don't know if any of you live in low, moderate, or middle-income buildings, but there's an organization called Community Preservation Corporation, CPC, that has $1 billion energy efficiency financing initiative, and they can help those buildings. So in conclusion, the green building laws are going to affect your co-op or condo if you have more than 50 units approximately. And building owners must hire certified energy auditors and retrocommissioning agents. They must be done every 10 years. And remember, if you take away nothing else, early compliance is key. And as far as the funding sources, there are multiple funding sources. You do have to cobble them together, but there's a lot there. And attractive financing terms are negotiable with the banks if you go to the right banks, and vendor financing is available. And the other thing I like to say is what the market value is equal to the market value. So are there any questions? I think I got right under the wire there. There's one way in the back.
Yeah. Quickly, I saw that there were ESCOs there as the last bullet point. What ESCOs are there that are doing business in New York City, off the top of your head?
I knew someone would do that. There's one. I even know there's a friend of mine that works there, and it's like ADGE or something like that. And you know them, right?
I use Strategic.
Okay. The one that Chris went to.
ADG.
ADG. Yeah. Any other?
I live in a co-op that has 20 units, so it seems like most of the presentation wasn't about that. But I'm wondering if there's a roadmap that is going to include buildings that have 50,000 square feet or less at some point in the future. They're going to be drawn into this framework.
I'm glad you mentioned that. I was at the Association for Energy Affordability today, and I was speaking to the president, and AEA is... the subcontractor for Con Ed's multifamily performance program for buildings, multifamily buildings of 5 to 75 units. So that's the program that you can tap into. And I have their first marketing piece here that they haven't actually distributed publicly. If you come up to me after, I can show it to you, and I can scan it and email it to you. I also have the application. So Con Ed is starting to actually take applications, but they haven't actually gone full force with the marketing effort yet. But that's the program that you would tap into.
If I could follow up, is this presentation going to be made available somewhere?
Yes.
The PowerPoint slides?
Yes.
Okay. They'll be on the public library's website.
Wonderful. Thanks.
And I guess I'll put them on my website, too.
You mentioned that Energy Star and NYSERDA were going to be teaming up to work on the benchmarking portion. Will that be through Energy Star itself, or will it be a separate portal? And do you have an idea of when they'll be releasing the new function?
I can't answer that. Hi.
Not going to be a separate portal. I'm Hillary Bieber. I work in the mayor's office. This is a really informative presentation, but I just want to let you know it's portfolio managers, the interface that's going to be used.
So manager.
You can actually begin benchmarking now and start putting in information from January up until now.
Okay.
And it's going to be an electronic report on portfolio manager that you're going to submit to the Department of Finance electronically. So it's all through Portfolio Manager, which has been used in existence today.
Good. Okay, because I'm using that already, so that's great. So now
exactly.
I just have
to get
it to you.
Well, NYSERDA uses a different program to calculate.
Multifamily
buildings will still have to go through Portfolio Manager.
But what will be the database of buildings that goes into
it? The Portfolio Manager doesn't use a database. It uses uses the CBEX database and then the REX database. So it's going to be used is nationally used to compare buildings. That's why NYSERDA is different, because it's just comparing what was inputted into the tool.
Yeah. Great, thank you. Hillary is from the Office of Long-Term Planning and Sustainability in the Mayor's Office. She's the one that did the green building laws.
I have a question. You mentioned the teams that would do the audits and the retro-commissioning are going to be engineers, architects, registered architects. Not all registered engineers or architects are available to do that, right?
They have to be certified. They have to have at a minimum for the audit, the multifamily building analyst certification,
right.
And for retro commissioning, it's very, very specific what those certifications are, and you can find them.
So it's just really finding, through the online or whatever.
Right. I think a good place to start is if you wanted me to help you, I could help you. But another good place to start is with the NYSERDA Multifamily Performance Partners. And you can go to NYSERDA's website, NYSERDA.org, and look for the multifamily program and then look for the partners. And that's a good place to start, because they can certainly do the audit. But again, they don't all have the certifications for the commissioning, but they're working on that.
Is this going to be self-certified, or are we going to have to submit this to like DOB, Department of Buildings, and wait for them to get around to doing it?
Well, self-certified, the professional engineer will certify that he's done the audit correctly, and that will be submitted with the retro commissioning report. The retro commissioning report will be certified by the certified retro commissioning agent. So I guess that's self-certified.
Yeah, that's right? What I mean. You're not going to have to wait for buildings to get around to.
I don't know. I don't know if Hillary knows. They haven't issued the rules, but right now you don't have to.
The engineer, the people who did the work on your building certified, and you're submitting that.
Yeah. I mean, that's why
okay.
They're licensed.
Make sure that it's certified.
Right.
Yeah, that makes a big difference.
Yeah. So you just hand it in.
So you don't have inspections and things.
Hillary?
That's going to be determined in the rules whether or not they'll audit.
Double check the work or something?
Efficiency report that they'll audit.
Yeah.
Will the architects and the engineers who will be performing these reviews or audits, are they going to be trained? Do they have to take some type of certification training, or is it just part of their regular engineering or architect certification?
No, they have to be certified, and you're really better off hiring someone that's done it before, that understands large multifamily buildings. I mean, I have to say most architects don't do this. And the energy auditing firms, they have staffs. They have, you know, some people do nothing but collect the data. They do other people that are, you know, just do the modeling. Other people just, you know, examine the ways of improving the systems after looking at all that other material. So it's a team effort. It's not just hiring an architect to do the audit. It's more involved. And the laws are not that long to read. If you read them, it's very clear what the certifications are, and you can look at that. If you come up later, I can show you.
Could you explain what type of tax credits and abatements will be available?
Probably we should do that one-on-one. I mean, I can give you a good website to go to find all that out. I mean, off the top of my head, I know you can get federal tax credits for windows, roofs. You can get state tax credits for solar. You can get a city tax, property tax abatement for solar, PV, and green roofs. They're working on a pilot for solar thermal. You know, there's a ton of stuff. If you go to a website called desireusa.org, which was on one of the slides, and you click on, there's a map of the United States, and you click on New York State, you can see everything that's available, including from utility companies. So it's all there. It's desireusa.com. Well, now you're gonna. let me find it on the slide. But I think it's desire.org. Do you remember where that one was, Sherry? I can't remember. I'll have to look it up after. Anyway, any other?
I just have, actually, for the mayor's office. I'm on the Council of New York City Cooperatives, and when we met with the city, one of the things we presented was, number one, who is going to give money to the co-ops that are spread over a vast amount of land, such as I have 65 acres of land to do this. And we also asked if you would give all co-ops and condos a list of certified engineers to be doing this as well. And I remember walking away from that table with, yes, you would have a list of engineers, and we were going to try to work on how we would give either the co-op or the condo that spent this money back, or the unit owners money back, so when the co-op assessed them to do the audit and whatever necessary work had to be done to be in compliance, we could receive credits as a homeowner of a co-op or a condo. And where is that status now?
There's two efforts. In terms of funding, the city has no funding. If anyone saw the mayor's press release, we have a lot of budget cuts coming our way. But the two efforts that we're trying to work on together, pools of money, is one would be a revolving loan fund where we have about $30 million in stimulus funds that we won through applying through grants, where people could use that money to implement the retrofits from conducting their audit, and then that money would be paid back through the energy savings. So that's in its... It's been 2 years in the making. We're developing the financial terms for that. So hopefully by the end of the year, that'll be up and running. We could start piloting that. And that's likely going to be targeted towards residential buildings. And then the other piece is PACE bonds, Property Assessed Clean Energy. And there's been a lot of attention to that in the federal government lately, which is sort of putting a halt on that. But that would be to pay back the financing through your property taxes. And the city
tried to pass legislation to make that happen, but now the federal government's standing in the way. So we're still working on that as well. So those they're moving, but now we have a lot of legal battles ahead of us, but we're fighting for it. So if you want to write to your council members and your state legislatures, do that to support PACE financing. And then in terms of, what was the second question? Was about not financing. Oh, about the list of engineers. I actually met with the Department of Buildings today. I don't know who you met with that promised that, because that's not something the city normally doesn't promote private sector companies for compliance, because there's 1,000 things that the city requires. So the Department of Buildings is looking into compiling some sort of approved list. Yes, exactly, for this, which is not something that they normally do, but because this is a unique situation, we're trying to work on that. But we need to figure out some sort of way to quality check these type of organizations. I recommend, amongst this group, sharing experience and recommending companies, like you said, you use a certain company within the residential community, because this is fairly new with amongst residential buildings.
Are there any other questions? There's time. If you have a question, it's okay. One more.
Isn't there already an approved list on NYSERDA's website of providers?
Yeah, those are the partners. That's right.
That's and the NYSERDA program, so that's a great place to start.
Right, that's what I said, yeah. Just go there. That's an excellent place to start. And they've just vetted that list, so now the people that are left are really the good qualified ones. NYSERDA is the – oh, that's a good question, and I should have said that. It's the New York State – Energy Research and Development Authority, and they collect from us as ratepayers to Con Ed what's called the SBC, the Service Benefit Charge. So every time you pay your Con Ed bill, you pay them a little extra money, that Service Benefit Charge, and that goes to NYSERDA, and that's the money that you're getting back. It's your money. Now, with the new programs, you know, I told you they closed down the multifamily performance program last June, and now they're starting it back up again. Now they have multiple streams of funds, and it's a little more complicated now. So they have money allocated to gas projects that can only be used for gas projects, electric money for electric projects, and so on. So it's a little bit more complicated. It's not just the SBC money, but it's the agency that gives you back the money. But you have to apply to the program. It's, you know, it's a little time consuming, but it's, you know, there's ways to get some financing there. Yes.
You mentioned up there on the slide the competitive bid process. Is that for the?
Is that the competitive bid process that's shown there for the energy audit and commissioning, or is it for the doing the actual work?
Well, this is how I do it. So this is just how I would do it. So. What I do if a board hires me, and you know they're volunteers, right? They have day jobs, and this is a kind of a complicated process. So what I do is I like everybody to play fair and be on, you know, even keel, and so I do an RFP with at least 5 energy auditing firms. Likewise, I do the same for the retro commissioning. So that way, the co-op board can look at. Look at 5 really decent proposals and say, you know, and then they don't just do it based on cost, because we look at who's done a building that's like your building, who understands a pre-war with passive ventilation, who understands a mechanically vented building, who understands, you know, a building that's on Riverside Drive that's facing the river that, you know, half of it's cold and half of it's hot, so who does really large buildings, you know, and so on. And so at the end, they don't pick it based on price. They don't. They have other reasons why they select, and in fact, they don't always pick the low cost bidder. Any others? You're asking really good questions. Okay. So, if there's no more, thank you very much for coming. What? Oh, right. Okay. I forgot. I had a sheet. You signed in for the library. If you want me to help you with anything, or you want to contact me, there's a sheet that's going to go around, and you can just give me your information if you want to. A lot of stuff is on my website, and you can contact me through that one, V. Corbett at IntelliGreen, or info@IntelliGreen.com. and I'm happy to answer any of your questions, particularly if you want to know your tax block number or something like that. It's really... Well, there's PropertyShark.com, and there's OasisNYC.net, and there's the city. Now, both of those grab the information from the city, so the city's got it, too. No, the Department of Finance's website. Yeah, ACRIS.
You can go to the DOT website as well. The building information.
Oh, hi.
which it has a lot of other stuff about the building as well.
Okay. So we have a lot of really nice energy auditors in the room. There's Adam DeSeo's from EME Group, and Jordan's from Power Concepts, and Matt is from Association for Energy Affordability, and they're all partners. Hi. Thank you very much.